I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Tens of thousands of Marylanders attend for-profit colleges or private career schools. A recent report by the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition finds that on average they pay more for their education, take out bigger loans, and end up with higher default rates than students at public institutions. For-profit schools get almost all their revenue, 86%, from federal and state grants and loans to their students. And for-profit schools attract a disproportionate number of low-income and minority students. Most African-Americans pursuing higher education in Maryland are doing it at a for-profit school. Are for-profit institutions predatory, plain and simple? Or do they have a role to play in our education system? It's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for joining us. Today we're talking about for-profit and private career schools. In Maryland, there are 11 for-profit colleges and 146 private career schools. Nearly 30,000 students attend them, studying to become nursing assistants or electrical technicians or travel agents and lots more. Some for-profits offer bachelor's degrees or even doctoral programs. But the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition recently released a scathing report on for-profit and private career schools, alleging they are overpriced, with low graduation rates, poor job prospects for graduates, and a tendency to use underhanded recruiting tactics. The report comes on the heels of a new federal rule governing for-profit schools. It's called the Gainful Employment Rule. It dictates that a for-profit college must prove its graduates earn enough money to pay off their loans. Programs that fail that test could lose access to financial aid. For many, that would mean closing. Last month, the for-profit sector lost a challenge to the rule in the U.S. Court of Appeals. Meanwhile, the Maryland General Assembly is considering a bill that would tighten curriculum requirements for private career schools, among other measures. In short, for-profit colleges and private career schools are under fire from all sides. Is for-profit education inherently misguided? Why do these institutions continue to draw so many students if they're so riddled with problems? Are they all bad apples? Here to help us answer these questions is Marceline White, Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. Welcome back to Midday.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad you could be here. And joining us by phone, we have Goldie Blumenstick, Senior Staff Writer for the Chronicle of Higher Education and a nationally known expert on for-profit higher ed. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Marceline Wright, you wrote the report I mentioned. It's full of interesting statistics about for-profit and private career schools. And I'm sure we'll explore those during the course of this hour. But first, what prompted you to explore this issue?
Sure. Well, one of the things we really look at are consumer protection issues and a lot of the things that cause people to either have debt or access to credit. And as you know, student loans are a huge issue, but particularly looking at the for-profit student loans and the debt people had and really trying to see if they're getting a bang for their buck, really trying to see if the money they're putting into the student loan debt is getting them the kind of gainful jobs and the higher education and is paying off for them. So we were lucky to be able to get support from the Able Foundation, who was interested in this topic. And at the same time, as you know, with Corinthian College and other information about for-profit schools at the national sector.
Corinthian College, I should say, is a national chain that went bankrupt last year and closed, leaving some students in the lurch.
So there's also been a lot of information in the past few years about problems at the national level. So we really wanted to dig in and look at Maryland and see how we were faring and if the issues were the same as we were hearing about at the federal level.
And did you conclude that the situation is as bad in Maryland as the national headlines indicate nationally?
Well, actually, Maryland has done a better job than a lot of states in terms of regulating already. We had more transparency in terms of graduation and completion rates than a lot of other schools, than a lot of other states. But we still had the same kinds of problems. Despite regulation, you were still seeing people not understanding the cost of the programs, not understanding that they could get the same kinds of degrees at a public college for fewer cost. And you were still seeing that people came out of the for-profit schools with these high debt burdens without getting the kinds of jobs they'd studied for.
Goldie Blumenstick, you have reported that enrollment in for-profit institutions is actually declining, and some, we just mentioned Corinthian having shut its doors. There are others that have closed. What is driving that decline?
Part of it is part of it has been some of the national scrutiny that's been taking place around the country. There's a lot more attention from attorneys general, from the federal government, on some of the concerns about recruiting abuses and misleading information about job placement results from these colleges. And a lot of that attention has just been out there, been a lot more visible in the public. The other reason that the enrollments are declining at a lot of the for-profit colleges is that nonprofit colleges have been stepping up a little bit. You know, for the longest time, for-profit colleges had an advantage in the market in that they were offering flexible schedules and a lot of online programs. I think we've seen in the last, 3 to 5 years, many more nonprofit colleges have been adding their own online offerings, and so students have sort of a different choice. And in fact, right now, some of these nonprofit colleges actually make a point of saying nonprofit in their ads.
Huh. Part of it. Marceline White, I want to get back to your point about the bad outcomes that so many pupils, students at for-profit schools have, because you testified on a bill. We'll talk about it later, a bill before the Maryland General Assembly. And one of the points you made, I don't have your exact words in front of me, but you basically said poor outcomes, and we find these students have not comparison shopped. If the students are not comparison shopped, and that was your verb, can we be surprised that they have bad outcomes if they're not looking? I mean, as Goldie Blumenstick tells us, some of the public institutions are stepping up to offer some of the same kind of education. So, isn't it on the students if they're having bad outcomes?
I think certainly everyone should have due diligence and really look at programs before they make that kind of decision. But what we found in the past is that for-profit schools have aggressively marketed, particularly towards low-income students and towards servicemen and women. They've gone to Wounded Warrior centers. They have been near military bases. And when we talked to students who've gone to for-profit colleges in Maryland, they said that they saw a lot of the advertising on TV and it looked very appealing. A lot of these students came straight from high school and they didn't have the financial literacy, which I know Maryland is working on as well, but they didn't have the understanding of what they were looking at when they were making these decisions. So I think we have a lot more work to do on financial literacy, but we also need to recognize that a lot of money went into aggressively marketing to these students.
Goldie Blumenstick, when and why did for-profit institutions become an important part of the higher ed landscape?
I say it's roughly around, they've been around actually for centuries. We've always had, private schools, privately owned business colleges and smaller institutions in communities all around the country. Schools like DeVry started as a DeVry Academy many, many years ago. What happened in kind of the late 90s was sort of Wall Street discovered this as a sector in a very big way. A few of the companies started doing online education, and they got some private equity investors. These people put their money in the schools, and a few years later, they wanted to get their money out of the schools, and so the schools went public on Wall Street. It was a very hot market in Wall Street for a while when a lot of other things were bombing, and even the tech center went down, and the for-profit colleges actually went up. And so some of it's been really just driven by a financial need, by people trying to sort of look for a financial investment, and these companies were what they call growth stocks on the market, right? They
didn't growth stocks.
Growth stocks. They weren't necessarily paying dividends, but they were. They needed to show that they were growing. That punched up the value of the stock, and the companies paid their employee, their top executives with stock options. And so there was a little bit for a certain sector of the market, the publicly traded sort of investor-driven sector of the market. There was a part of the period where it was really driven a lot by sort of a demand for growth and an investor demand. Now, in fairness, at the same time, a lot of these schools were providing not just, as I said before, kind of a convenient education for students who needed it, but also, a necessary education. They were educating people for careers that existed out there in tech, in healthcare, and some of these other fields.
And I should say that we contacted both a national and state trade group of for-profit schools, as well as five different for-profit institutions. You mentioned a minute ago, Goldie, you mentioned DeVry. We contacted DeVry, the University of Phoenix, and ITT Technical Institute. No one agreed to come on the show. This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about some of the charges that have been leveled against for-profit colleges and private career schools. What about you? Have you attended such a school? Do you have debt that you're still paying off? What is your reaction to it? You can join our conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780, or you can email midday@wypr.org. John is calling us from Bellcamp. John, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for having me on. When I heard this topic, every nerve in my body went off. I'm currently an adjunct at a couple of local colleges that whose names you'd recognize, and I previously taught speech at a private for-profit school, and I've got to tell you, I would never go back. I felt like I was participating in something absolutely immoral. The recruiters at this particular school, which is not in Maryland, it's in Pennsylvania, but it's a part of a national chain, were not recruiters so much as they were salespeople. And they seemed to target desperately hopeful people for, you know, great expenditures, you know, on jobs that would never exist. For example, at this particular school, they were hot on selling massage therapy programs. And there were no massage therapy jobs in the entire region I was in. But these kids would come in, they'd rack up huge loans, and wind up working in, well, I ran into two of them one time at a supermarket. They were working in an Amazon distribution center for $10 an hour because they had all these school loans, and there was no way to ever get a job in the field that they'd hoped for.
These were graduates.
Work for a place like that again.
These were graduates of the school where you taught.
Yeah.
John, I appreciate you giving us this picture. Marceline White, what goes through your mind when you hear John's testimony about the place where the for-profit school where he worked?
It sounds familiar. Those are the kinds of stories we hear from students on the other end, that they thought they were going in to get a degree that would lead to a job that would improve the lives of their families, but instead they couldn't get a job in the field. Sometimes the certifications weren't right. Sometimes they didn't have the accreditation. The school wasn't actually accredited. So there are a lot of problems, and a lot of them have gone back to nonprofit workforce development training programs to actually get the skills they need to get these kinds of jobs. So even after they're still paying off their for-profit student loans, they're now in another program, spending more time to actually get a path towards a successful job.
Goldie Blumenstick, John mentioned the inability of some of the students he knew to actually get a job, which brings us, I think, to something I mentioned in the intro, and that is this gainful employment rule. Can you give us a brief synopsis of how it is supposed to work?
It's a pretty complex rule, but the simple version of it is students, if you're enrolled in a program, and at the end of the day, if the amount of debt you incur, which is sort of related back to the price that you're paying, right? So think about it more. It's about debt, but it's really about the price of the program. If students aren't going to be able to get jobs that will let them pay off their debts when they're done because of the cost of this program, then the program won't be eligible for federal financial aid going forward.
And this has to be true of every student? Or, I mean, how true is true?
It's not every single student. There's like a X number of students in various categories of programs. There's where it gets all, you know, complicated and you get into the weeds. But, you know, calculate these numbers based on the number of graduates, and then they'll calculate the wages of the graduates, and then they'll kind of go back and retroactively decide this program doesn't meet the gainful employment test. It can't continue. This program, the price is appropriate to the eventual debt that the student will incur, and therefore this program is eligible.
And
so it's very program by program specific, and it actually applies across the board to all of higher education. It just so happens that most of the programs that fall under this rule are at for-profit colleges.
So, at those programs, it applies to public institutions also.
Yes, but those are programs primarily at community colleges. They tend not to, it's not really the degree-granting programs like your typical BA degree. It's more for a program that sort of prepares you for a career.
That is Goldie Blumenstick, senior staff reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education here on Midday on WIPR. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, more from Goldie Blumenstick and Marceline White, executive director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. And we'll be taking your calls, too. You can join the conversation by calling 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the perils of for-profit colleges and private career schools. I want to hear now from someone who has personal experience with this. On Friday, I spoke with Amone Randolph. In 2012, she enrolled in an aesthetics skincare program at a private trade school in Maryland that has since been taken over by another institution. While enrolled in school, she became pregnant and went on leave. She says she was subsequently removed from the roster and not allowed to complete the month of coursework that remained. Ms. Randolph first heard about the program when representatives visited her high school, Forest Park High in Baltimore. Here she is describing her conversation with an admissions officer.
She made it seem like a great process, but after she talked to me about getting in, the financial aid process was not really explained to me. I didn't sign up for financial aid, and when they asked me, they didn't give me the opportunity to probably go see if I qualified for it. They just knew that I didn't sign up for it, so they went along with just finding me grants and loans. And at the end, she didn't tell me quite about my loans that I had, because she said I would have probably like $1,000 left. So because she just went ahead and just did it, I signed up for a loan. I told her ideally I didn't want to do that. That's what my mom came with me through the process, and that was her big thing, that she didn't want me to have a loan. So she kind of sugarcoated it, made it seem like, okay, well, it won't be that bad. So basically I only had 2 grants, but she told me I had 4, but she told me I qualified for them. She didn't specify that I didn't have them. So, you know, I kind of thought that I had the 4 grants.
So you were expecting that you might have a debt of about $1,000, and instead it turned out to be what?
I don't quite know the number right offhand, but it's like $12,000 or a little bit over that. I know the payment that they want me to make now is $1,000, but that's only part of it, including my interest.
I'm sorry, this is the monthly payment you're expected to make?
Yes, my payment that I'm supposed to make now is $1,000, $1,400.
Do you feel like you were misled?
Very much so.
So you didn't get a certificate. How about the rest of your class?
I didn't get a certificate at all. The last test, I took my last test for the last module that we were in, and that was like the last thing I got. But I don't have any credits that even if I wanted to pick up for another school that I can pick up where I left off, because I only had like one module to go in. Now I will have to start all the way over if I wanted to go back and get into that field.
The other students who were in your class, do you know what kind of experience they had?
I kept in contact with at least 3 people, which do not have their certificate, nor do they have their state board for aesthetics, and they're working in different careers. Nobody from my class actually graduated.
What do you wish you had known that you've learned since then?
I just wish I knew more about the financial part, because that's the only thing that's really following me. It's not that I had anything to really learn from there. It's just the student loans that I can tell you that are definitely there.
I really appreciate you telling us about it, Amone. Yeah. I wish you luck.
Thank you so much. I definitely thought it was a good idea, because I wouldn't want this to happen to anybody else, because it's very stressful. And for me to be my age now at 24 when I did it when I was 19, it's following me now, and I have nothing to show for it.
Amone Randolph, who is now attending a publicly funded career program. Marceline White, is that a story you heard a lot?
It is. We've talked to a lot of students who've gone through for-profit schools, and many of the students we talked to thought they were getting grants. They didn't understand they were taking out student loans. So whatever information was conveyed when they were being enrolled into these programs was not conveyed in a way that they understood that they were taking out these loans. They thought they were grant programs. So they were all quite upset when they saw the amount of debt they were carrying and that they needed to pay off, particularly when they didn't have a job that justified that.
Goldie Blumenstick, we talked in terms of one particular rule, the gainful employment rule that you said also applies to public schools. In general, are for-profit institutions and traditional public schools held to the same standards?
And they're all subject to rules on default rates on their student loans. Actually, that story Ms. Randolph told is a very sad story. I wanted to mention for a second, I know that the report that the commission came up with recommended a waiting period for students, that they should be able to sort of go back later on and not feel rushed about how they've been enrolled in school and be able to cancel their enrollment within a certain number of days. And that's an idea that I think is probably something that would have helped avoid that kind of situation that Ms. Randolph encountered.
Is that in place in some states?
I don't think there are that many. I think there are some states that have that kind of a rule. I can't name it state by state. I think that idea came from some other states, but I don't know it state by statewide. The rules that apply to for-profit colleges, other than the gainful employment rule, there are two or three others that are, some of them are general. All the colleges are subject to this federal laws about default rates. They can't have too high a number of their students defaulting on their student loans, and they can't have, and so that's one of the few things that the government kind of comes down on for-profit colleges. They sort of worry about having too many students defaulting on the loans, and it's what drives some of these schools to be that recently has driven some of the colleges to be a little bit more careful about who they're enrolling, because they don't want to be enrolling students who are going to be necessarily defaulting on the loans, because in the end the schools could get sanctioned by that.
Let me just interrupt a second, Goldie, to ask Marceline White to remind us what you found in terms of default rates among graduates of for-profit
Sure.
schools and private career schools.
Well, in Maryland, 23% of students enrolled in a for-profit school for a certificate or degree default on their loans, which is compared to about 15% of public schools. So it's a little bit higher.
Okay, and in that you are lumping sort of all the for-profits, the very big ones, and the small mom and pop ones, and you're also lumping all the government.
Yeah.
So you're talking about community colleges and selective four-year colleges funded.
We used IPEDS data from the Department of Education and the Maryland Higher Education Commission data sets.
IPEDS is an independent, I don't have it in front of me, independent, it's a...
It's the government's database on student loans, yeah. Basically.
Best way to describe it. Thank you. So I guess my question is, Marceline, when both sides of that comparison have such disparate schools, does it really tell us anything?
It's hard to make some of the comparisons, and so we tried to separate out where we could apples from oranges. So, for example, if you're pursuing a four-year degree in philosophy or English, for example, your job prospects are going to be a little bit different than they are if you're pursuing it in computer science, where you should be going directly into a job in that field. Whereas in English, you may not go into a job that directly relates. So when we're looking at the programs, we did try to recognize when you had completion issues that there were differences in terms of the degrees that people pursued. And in the report, we talk a little bit more about that. The full report is on our website, which is www.marylandconsumers.org. But we do go into looking at the differences in terms of completion rates and graduation rates and employment. But we tried to use data so that we were using what the numbers told us as much as possible, and then explaining them if there seem to be discrepancies.
We will link to the report on our website, the midday page at WYPR. George has called us from Anne Arundel County. George, welcome to Midday.
Hello. Hey, just two things. One is anybody out there listening, either themselves or for relatives or friends, are considering going into some program, please don't be swayed by a grant, as was mentioned by your last interview there, because let's say there's a course that's worth $10,000, but they put a price on it of $12,000 and then tell you you're going to get a $2,000 grant, and you say, wow, how can I not take advantage of that? So it's like in a department store where they mark something up and then they put it on sale. But the other thing I wanted to mention is that I really applaud the fact that finally our government is doing something about trying to restrain the activities of the for-profits that are taking advantage of students and taxpayers. But really, the only answer, because there's always going to be some unscrupulous people out there that will take advantage of running a school. So the only way to control it is to make all the schools, particularly the nonprofits, the for-profits, to have a responsibility for repaying the loans that their students are getting, so that they will not accept students and will not give classes which aren't going to have favorable results. And unless you get to the root of the problem by making them give back money that they received, then I don't think any of the other efforts are really going to work.
Interesting idea, George. Let me ask Goldie Blumenstick whether anybody is talking about putting the financial responsibility directly onto the schools, the for-profit schools themselves.
There is an idea out there like that. They call it the skin in the game rule or the skin in the game discussion. Because George is right. Right now, when I said that the colleges can be sanctioned if they have too high a default rate, well, that rate has to be very high for a consecutive number of years, and the schools have and the loan collection agencies that they work with have various ways to kind of make that default rate never really get triggered to the point where they get penalized. And so really the only people who do it end up getting penalized are the students who graduate, particularly without a degree and a lot of debt. The skin in the game rule, it's a little complicated how they might set it up, but would actually make the schools a little bit more directly responsible too. Then they'd have much more onus on themselves to not be enrolling students who they're going to ill serve with their education or clearly they're not going to benefit from the degree.
You're listening to Midday on WYPR. We're talking about for-profit schools and private career schools. Join the conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We got an email from Monica, who writes this. She says, my sense is that these colleges accept students into their programs that would not be accepted by public or nonprofit institutions for academic reasons, and even if they are accepted, could not attend a public school for financial and or work schedule reasons. How true is that? I feel like students that fall prey to these programs are desperate to get training and that these end up being the only places they can go. What about that, Marceline White?
I think one of the things we have found is a lot of the students are very desperate. A lot of times you have somebody who's trying to improve the lives of their families. A lot of times people we've met are single mothers who are really looking for a way to get a better job to support their children or their child. And the online enrollment and the flexibility in scheduling is important. And that's one of the things that draws them to a for-profit school. That being said, the outcome, if they were able to get a degree that led them to a good job, that might be one thing. But they're paying a lot more than they would if they were able to go to a public university or public college, and they're not getting the job. So that's where we have a problem. I think the flexibility is a good thing. Unfortunately, the outcome is that they end up with these high debts and they still aren't getting the jobs that they thought they were preparing themselves for.
Well, it's not obvious to me. Goldie Blumenstick, maybe you can make this more clear to me. Are the outcomes, both in terms of the proportion of enrollees who end up with a degree or certificate and what their employment outcome is, are they significantly different at these schools, these for-profit schools we're talking about, compared to community colleges? Because they both tend to be schools which essentially take all comers. I mean,
right.
they're not selective.
Yeah, community colleges are open access as well. Community colleges probably do a little bit more in student remediation right off the bat because then perhaps at the for-profit colleges. And as Marceline pointed out, the upfront investment is different. You know, the outcomes are really hard to measure. For one thing, the data is really bad nationally. Most of the official graduation rate that we have of our country is based on students who are enrolling for the first time full-time. Both at community colleges and at for-profit colleges, most of the students are not necessarily enrolling full-time, and many of them are not first-time students. Some of them have tried a little college somewhere else. So we really have very bad data right now about even in terms of tracking some of this stuff. The other thing is the for-profit sector is It's not really a sector. That's a very broad category for a very diverse set of schools. The student who you spoke to earlier, who was going for her degree as an esthetician, I can never say that word right. She was enrolling one kind of college. The student who enrolls at a Capella University, a school that offers degrees, doctoral degrees, and master's degrees, that they're going to appeal to a different kind of student. So the broad category is a little hard to generalize as well. But people have done some studies on the outcomes, and some of this is somewhat reputational. But there have been some studies that have suggested that in students coming out with comparable kinds of degrees from different schools, that the for-profit degree is a little less well-regarded in the marketplace. Whether that's actually fair or not, I don't know, but that's a perception out there right now. Some new studies have just come out to say that.
Valerie is calling us from Randallstown. Valerie, welcome to Midday.
Hi, I just had some, I'd like you to speak on the transferring of credits from the for-profit schools aren't recognized in the industry that you just stated, and why, and the selling of the students' loans. I was actually talking to students who's taken out loans, and then it was sold, and then they're paying these outrageous payments, and schools that are allowed to go into bankruptcy and then reopen under another name.
Okay, you've raised, Valerie, two big questions. So let me take them one at a time. The question of the credits not being accepted, is that something you looked at in Maryland, Marceline White?
It is. One of the issues that we found is that sometimes a program isn't accredited at the state level or isn't accredited nationally. So a student may go through a program and not be able to get the degree because the credits aren't recognized from that school. So that it has been an issue in Maryland, or the licensure, the school doesn't meet licensure requirements for somebody, for the state boards, for whatever program. So we found that to be an issue among some schools in Maryland. And the other issue is that, yes, the student loans are sold, very much the same kinds of problems you saw with mortgage servicing, you see with student loan servicing, where the student loan debt will be combined and bundled and sold off to somebody else to collect. And we've had students who went to an art school, defaulted on his loan, had his wages garnished, paid his loan off, had the charge-off statement saying loan paid in full. That loan was sold off after it was paid, and his wages were garnished again, even though he'd paid it off 5 years ago.
But let me just make sure I understand, Goldie Blumenstick. Are these loans to students at for-profit colleges any more likely to be sold in a secondary market than loans at government-funded institutions?
The only loans that would be sold off in the secondary market would be the private student loans, not the government loans. But the government, the loans that the more recent loans are probably more. You could go ahead and borrow a little additional money from a private lender, but those are not. That's different than what the government loans are. The issue with the government-funded loans, though, is that they're being serviced by private companies, and there's been a lot of complaints in the market from students even about how their loans are being serviced. I want to talk about that transfer of credit thing.
Can you hold this thought, Goldie? We need to take a short break here. When we come back, Goldie Blumenstock, a reporter with the Chronicle for Higher Education, will make the point that she wants to make, and Marceline White, Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition, will still be here, and we'll be talking about for-profit schools. You can be part of this conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about for-profit higher education and private career schools. The federal government has been cracking down on some of these schools' recruiting and pricing practices, and the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition recently issued a very critical assessment. Marceline White, executive director of that coalition, is here, and joining us by phone is Goldie Blumenstick, senior staff writer from the Chronicle of Higher Education. What about you? Have you attended a career school or a for-profit college? Do you feel cheated, or did you have a good experience? Are such schools offering something traditional public institutions do not, join the conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Goldie Blumenstick, I cut you off. You were about to make another point.
Yeah, no worries. I was going to talk about that transfer of credit, which is an issue, frankly, across all of higher education. Anytime you talk to a student who's switched schools, you'll probably hear some kind of a horror story about how a lot of their credits didn't transfer. But it's compounded in the for-profit sector, for a particular set of schools in the for-profit sector, because some of them have a different kind of accreditation. There are, I know this gets also back into that all that arcane stuff, but the kind of accreditor that would accredit the University of Maryland and Johns Hopkins is something called the regional accreditor. A lot of the for-profit colleges that are more career-focused are accredited by these national accreditors.
So the fact that these credits don't transfer often doesn't mean it's not that the for-profit school was not accredited or was not meeting standards. They were just meeting different standards.
They were meeting, right. If they're not accredited, they can't offer federal financial aid. But they meet a different standard. And the regional accreditors that we think of as from the traditional colleges that that you'd think about as knowing, you know, that offer a four-year degree, a BA degree that you may be familiar with, those schools generally don't accept that many credits from schools that are accredited by a national accreditor.
But I am confused, and perhaps one of you can set me straight, because your report points out, Marceline, right? The Consumer Coalition's report points out that 86% of the revenue of these for-profit schools as a group comes from federal grants and loans, and you also make the point that these schools market heavily to low-income. Often African-American students, partly because they are eligible for federal grants. So I'm not clear on why they end up with such a heavy loan burden, such a heavy debt burden, if so many of these students, the whole reason they're attractive to these schools is that they could get a federal grant.
Well, no, most of that money is federal loans, though.
It is federal loans. So there just really aren't that many grants available.
Right.
Well, they probably qualify for the maximum Pell Grant, a grant that's used for low-income students, but the schools cost a lot more than that. At a community college, your Pell Grant would more than likely cover your entire cost of tuition and some living expenses. At a for-profit college, the tuition's a lot higher, and so you're going to also have to go out and borrow money under the federal student loan program. Also, those two numbers together are what add up to that.
Gotcha. I get it now. Marceline White?
Yeah, I was just going to say, as an example, if you look in Maryland at a for-profit school that has a dental hygiene degree, they're charging $52,000 for a degree in dental hygiene. Now, an associate's degree in dental hygiene at a public college costs about $8,700. And $4.
So that's the comparison between a public community college.
And a for-profit. But you can see that huge difference. So if you're going to the for-profit school and you're taking out these Pell Grants and this federal student aid.
You need loans on top of the grants. I get it. B, who is a teacher, is calling us from Baltimore. B, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to address the issue of the caliber of the students. Somebody called in talking about that. It's not the caliber of the students that make these students go to these schools. It's the misinformation that these recruiters come to high schools and wow these students. But I've run across people who, for a medical assistance program, have racked up incredible debts and had to repay them when the school lost its accreditation, a for-profit school, and then found out that she could have gotten, let's say, these people could have gotten a better education at community college doing the same thing. So if these recruiters were just disallowed from engaging in all this salesmanship at the high school level, then these kids could just go to community college and get everything paid for, as someone just said, with Pell Grants. And it'd be that easy, you know. Thank you.
Bea, thanks. Thank you for calling us. What did you find, Marceline White, in Maryland about the advertising and recruiting practices of for-profit schools? Was that something you looked at?
We did. And so talking to people, we found that they were mainly drawn in by TV advertisements and were aggressively marketed to people came to high schools, many in Baltimore City, and appealed to students that it would be easy, it would help them did not explain, as we've already discussed, that it was financial loans they were taking out, not aid, not grants, or we're not clear about the process of what the real cost would be and what they would owe. And what we found is that it wasn't clear in terms of what was needed to complete the entire program. So people didn't know all of the requirements going in. They just were told it was very easy and they would get these kinds of great jobs. So it's been misleading.
The coalition sent a mystery shopper in to experience some of the sales pitches, et cetera. Is there any actual regulation of the sales practices of for-profit schools?
Well, they've done some work in the past saying that you can't get incentives anymore. But I think Goldie had mentioned before, or someone had mentioned, that oftentimes the financial aid office really acts more as a sales office than it does in terms of admitting people and really checking to make sure that you're going to qualify. Our student asked about coursework and they directed her to a financial aid officer. She was then followed up 6-7 times by phone and by email. So she said she felt a lot of pressure in terms of signing right there and then, which is why we came up with the recommendation of giving people a little bit of time and space to think about the loan and being able to come back and cancel if it wasn't right for them. So, and we also found that not all the information was on the website as it's supposed to be in terms of the cost of the programs.
Goldie Blumenstick, I know I'm searching my memory bank to remember what I read about Corinthian, the national chain that went bankrupt. A judge held them liable for like more than $1 billion for essentially false advertising. But that was after the fact. That was after the chain had closed. Is there nationally, is there any kind of prospective check on the techniques that for-profit schools use to recruit?
I mean, there have been rules on the books for several years. Under the Obama administration, they've sort of toughened up the rules on what they call misrepresentation. And they've toughened the rules on incentive compensation for recruiters. That was something that was somewhat distressing in reading that report from the Maryland Commission, because I think if you had someone on the from the For-Profit Association on the show right now, I know their line lately is like, yes, we've had some bad actors in the past, we've had some bad practices, but we've reformed ourselves. That's what they'll argue. But, I mean, the fact that these mystery shoppers could go out and still find a lot of this behavior right now suggests, obviously, that there's still a way to go on this.
And I just want to repeat that we did try very hard to talk to somebody from either a nonprofit school or the trade association, and they were not interested in being part of this conversation. Martin,
I've talked to the folks at University of Phoenix, and I've done some reporting on some of the recruiting. Though these schools do claim that they do their own self policing, they record the calls, and they have some of them even have software that's supposed to trigger a warning if somebody uses the kind of a word that sounds like it's overpromising a situation. The word guarantee is supposed to trigger some kind of scrutiny from the compliance department, but I don't know that that's necessarily the case at some, you know, across the board in the industry. I know they have this capacity at the biggest schools.
Martin had called us. He couldn't stay on the line, but he posed a question which makes me think we haven't made clear perhaps some of the predicates of our discussion here. Martin said public schools make money too. I'm not sure I would agree with that. I think the state of Maryland covers a lot of spending. But Martin wanted to know, what exactly does the term for-profit mean? Goldie Blumenstick?
It means the school is owned by private investors who, whether they're people who own stock in the company or whether they're owned by individuals or investor groups. And at the end of the day, the profit goes back to the investors as opposed to going back into the enterprise. At a state institution, the money goes back to the state or goes back to the state institution. At a private university, the money goes back to the value of the institution, back to the programs at the institution itself.